Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you for joining us as we recognize our nation's birthday. You know, our FBI and the National Security Agency directors have stated that the recent Chinese cyber assault on our critical infrastructure is preparation for a conflict with us. In the face of these warnings, a wartime posture of dispersing forces across new and different sites, hardening facilities, actively camouflaging the dispersed and hardened locations would be prudent. By operating Defense Department facilities in a wartime manner, a strong message of readiness and deterrence would be communicated. But history is repeating itself. In early 1941, as we saw Japan getting more hostile, Army General Short and Navy Admiral Kimmel were sent to prepare for Pearl Harbor. In what has been characterized in hindsight as a major strategic error of judgment, in spite of rising tensions with Japan, they dismissed a wartime posture of dispersing and hardening and camouflaging. Instead, they both chose to protect their forces by administratively grouping the ships and planes. This deadly mistake ensured that our aircraft and ships were much easier to attack on December 7, 1941, and history seems to be repeating itself. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. You've got some vacation plans, don't you, Skip?
Oh, Colonel, I do. Well, you know, I have 19 grandchildren, but only one of those grandchildren live in my home state. So I tend to travel more than the normal person because I'm going, you know, all over the country just visiting grandkids and my adult children. So, but it's going to be fun. Going to have lots of good times and probably get wore out.
Okay, here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the war being conducted against Israel. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then Medal of Honor recipient Jim McClure will discuss our great nation. And then we'll discuss the service and death of Navy SEAL Dave Warson with his dad. General Don Bacon will then discuss his service to our nation. And Navy vet Teresa Robinson will introduce another female veteran.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by a colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. We'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, late last month, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a former police officer who was seeking to throw out an obstruction charge for joining the Capitol protest on January 6, 2021. The justices, in a 6-3 vote on non-ideological lines, handed a win to defendant Joseph Fisher, who was among hundreds of January 6 defendants, including a number of veterans, who have been charged with obstructing an official proceeding to prevent Congress certification of President Biden's election victory. The court concluded that the law, enacted in 2002, was only intended to apply to more limited circumstances involving forms of evidence tampering, not the much broader array of situations that prosecutors had claimed that it covered.
This is a good ruling. It has amazed me that former President Trump has been accused but never charged with this nonsense. And rioters who burned buildings and attacked police over the nation were never, ever accused of anything in years past.
And there apparently was an attempt by some military personnel to overthrow the Bolivian government late last month. There were at least 21 men arrested after a group of military armored vehicles attempted what the government has called a failed coup d'etat. A Bolivian judge sent former General Juan Jose Zuniga, who led the failed coup, to a maximum security prison on preventative detention alongside two others accused of terrorism and armed uprising against the state.
Most third world countries are dictatorships. There may be elections, but the military often takes control when they're displeased with the elected leaders. That's why our Constitution makes our elected president the commander-in-chief of our military.
And the sole purpose of our armed forces is to defend our nation against external enemies. The service academies train officers committed to fulfilling this mission. This mission, defense of the nation, makes our military arguably the most important institution in the country. Without a nation, other institutions wouldn't exist. Given its importance, our military shouldn't be a laboratory for social experimentation, especially one based on critical race theory, a contentious and abstract social theory. Yet, as the Commission Report on Civic Education and the Military shows in great detail, critical race theory is promoted within diversity, equity, and inclusion training throughout our military, from the Pentagon through the ranks and in our service academies. Critical race theory is based on an assumption that no matter what progress is made on ensuring equal rights for minorities, white privilege and subconscious racism continues to prevail among whites, no matter their professed support for diversity and inclusion in their workplace, community, or immediate and extended families. Critical race theory assumes that racism is systemic from the very founding of our nation and that our Constitution was drafted to ensure the white privilege of slaveholders. Whatever the appearance of progress, constitutional amendments and legislation to protect equal rights for racial minorities is a facade that still preserves white privilege. Critical race theory is based on assumptions, not empirically derived evidence, and is by nature divisive. Diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, which rely on critical race theory, clearly are not workplace sensitivity training.
This is very, very true. This CRT nonsense needs to be identified as such and banned from our military and our government. We need to recruit and promote based on ability, not race.
And to continue on the CRT topic, a new report said Pentagon programs to sniff out white supremacists in our military came up empty-handed and were even counterproductive to military readiness and morale. The report by Arizona State University's Center for American Institutions revealed that the efforts to search for violent extremists in the military have yielded rare and infrequent results. The report uncovered that the military's search for white supremacists, seemingly the only extremists that interest the military, has come up short. Only 100 members of the military were deemed to be extremists out of a force of 2.1 million.
It's very clear to me that our military leadership is totally focused on being politically correct and not at all concerned on being combat ready. And we have a number of enemies like Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea who may well be preparing to attack us.
And speaking of threats, we just wrapped up our first multi-domain exercise with Japan and South Korea in the East China Sea, a step forward in our efforts to strengthen and lock in security partnerships with key Asian allies in the face of growing threats from North Korea and China. The three-day Freedom Edge increased the sophistication of previous exercises with simultaneous air and naval drills geared toward improving joint ballistic missile defense, anti-submarine warfare, surveillance, and other skills and capabilities. The exercise, which is expected to expand in years to come, was also intended to improve the country's abilities to share missile warnings, increasingly important as North Korea tests ever more sophisticated systems.
This is a very good move, but it's going to take a lot more than this to maintain peace in that part of the world.
And North Israel is a series of ghost towns, abandoned houses and scorched forests from Hezbollah missiles. Parts of South Lebanon have been hit so hard by Israeli bombs that they've been reduced to rubble. Thousands of residents have been driven from homes on both sides. A steady, if ugly, tit-for-tat between Israel and Hezbollah since October has been shifting into something more alarming. Record numbers of Hezbollah projectiles, some 900, hit Israel last month. Israel, meanwhile, is carrying out deeper and more destructive attacks in Lebanon and has just approved a battle plan for the country. While Iran-backed Hezbollah and Israel say they don't want a full-blown war, concern is higher than ever they're stumbling into one, or will deliberately start one.
I believe there will be a war. The terrorists exist only to kill Jews. They've never honored a ceasefire or peace plan, ever. And the guy behind it is Iran, who's evil. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Please check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. And then we'll talk with Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan. At ease, troops, take a break. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices going up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. There's little doubt in my mind that there will soon be a massive ground war in Lebanon. Hezbollah's nonstop attacks on Israel are the reason. Hezbollah has never kept any agreement to keep the peace. The main question is whether the Biden administration intends to provide Israel with the munitions it needs to prosecute this war successfully. The White House says it has Israel's back, but recent reports shows that we don't. Contrary to President Biden's oft-repeated ironclad commitment to Israel's security, he has a policy of criminalizing Israel and its citizens. First, we have stepped-up sanctions against Israeli nationals and organizations. And there's the change in our policy regarding visa and immigration applications from Israeli citizens. Immediately after the Hamas-led Palestinian invasion and slaughter of October 7th, the Egyptian government said that, contrary to the binding requirements of international humanitarian law, Egypt prohibited Gaza residents from entering Egypt to seek refuge either there in Egypt or in neighboring countries. And we supported it. Egypt wasn't held responsible for protecting the Gazans from the war that their regime started. Israel was responsible. Huh? Days after October 7th, we began demanding that Israel provide a constant supply of food, water, and other goods to Gaza. We cited the wholly unsupported and now discredited claims from the UN that Gaza was on the verge of famine. Although the Netanyahu government quickly folded under our threats to accuse Israel of war crimes, the Israeli public is united in its opposition to our position. Videos from Gaza emerge daily showing Gaza gunmen seizing the aid trucks, shooting civilians trying to take goods from them. Former Middle East envoy Dennis Ross reported, quote, a UN official told me lately that 80% of the humanitarian assistance going into Gaza has been looted by criminal gangs or Hamas, end quote. Most Israelis believe that the humanitarian aid undermines the war effort by keeping Hamas fully supplied. And it lets Hamas control who gets food and endangers the IDF soldiers in Gaza. Tzav 9, Emergency Orders in Israeli, is a protest group that Israeli citizens formed in January to protest truck convoys. The Tzav asked citizens to come to crossing points into Gaza to block the trucks from going into Gaza. And shortly, lots of Israelis were camped out near the crossing points day after day after day. Tzav 9's operations are legal, a form of protected speech. On occasions where protesters broke the law, they were removed by police. Our government made no secret of its anger over these lawful political protests. Our officials from Biden down condemned Tzav 9's protests. Then our State Department sanctioned Tzav 9. It froze whatever assets there were, threatened sanctions against any organization or individual that supported its work, and banned its representatives from coming here. This sent shockwaves through Israel. It raised fears that Israeli groups and governmental ministers, including Finance Minister Baziel Samarich, may soon be sanctioned by us. See, Samarich has been condemned by progressives for refusing to transfer funds to the Palestinian Authority due to its support for terrorism. So our government may sanction Sumrich and others for their lawful actions because we demand that Israel implement a policy of backing the creation of a Palestinian state, a move rejected by most Israelis. Then there's our immigration policy for Israeli nationals. Reporter Itar Eidrich reported in a report entitled, quote, U.S. asked Israelis applying for a green card whether they committed war crimes. He reported a number of times where IDF veterans and reservists applying for U.S. entry permits, ranging from tourist visas to green cards, have faced detailed interrogations under oath regarding their service in the IDF. For instance, Yuval, an Israeli high-tech manager working in Silicon Valley, received a letter from our Citizenship and Immigration Services requiring him to submit a sworn affidavit describing his military service in granular detail. Get this. Among other things, the letter asked, did you participate as a combatant in battles during your military service? If so, please describe your activity and role in these battles. Did you command soldiers in the army? If yes, please describe the aspects of your command. Have you ever guarded or commanded others to guard detainees? Did you use explosives during your military service? If so, detail the types of explosives or weapons that you were trained on. How often did you use weapons or explosives? Did you use a weapon or explosive against another person? If so, the circumstances must be detailed and explained why you used a weapon and or an explosive against another person or people. Wow. A reserve combat soldier related that she had traveled to Europe after completing duty in Gaza and planned to continue to the U.S. A consular officer in a U.S. consulate in Western Europe questioned her for half an hour about her service in Gaza and then told her she was barred from entering the United States. We Americans don't favor our government criminalizing the Israeli military, yet our government is amassing a large database of sworn statements from soldiers that can be manipulated to be used against them and the country. Since then, Prime Minister Netanyahu has revealed that we largely stopped providing Israel with vital munitions 6 months ago. Our government has been issuing infuriated, self-righteous denials, and it was our government, not Netanyahu, that began leaking the policy of, quote, slow-walking munitions, including artillery and tank shells and aerial bombs, in January. Even if that weren't the case, our government's hostility towards Israel, a hostility exposed by its sanctions against law-abiding Israelis protesting, and its new immigration policies, both show that our government isn't telling the truth. Not only is the Israeli leader telling the truth, his decision to expose our government's dirty double game against the Jewish state is absolutely necessary and honorable. Why are we supporting terrorists to attack the only democracy in the region? We need to stop opposing Israel and stand with her totally, period. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, Colonel, it looks like the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be reviewing a federal circuit court's decision denying differential pay to Nick Falicano, an air traffic controller for the Federal Aviation Administration and a U.S. Coast Guard reservist. Falicano was called to active duty during Operations Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom and was ordered to duty aboard a Coast Guard vessel responsible for escorting U.S. military ships to and from American harbors. Falicano applied for and was denied a differential pay grant by the FAA. The FAA said that since his service was unconnected to the ongoing national emergency and contingency operations related to the war in Iraq, he was not eligible for differential pay. The FAA cited Adams versus Department of Homeland Security, which held that reservists are only entitled to differential pay when directly called to service in a contingency operation. You know, I'm glad the U.S. Supreme Court's going to review this case. When a reservist gets called to active duty, they really have no say in where they're going to serve. However, the financial impact is the same, whether they're serving stateside or in a foreign country. Hopefully, this wrong is going to be made right through the U.S. Supreme Court. Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead, we'll talk with Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan. Then we'll discuss the life and death of Navy SEAL Dave Worson. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
The U.S. is more than $32 trillion in debt, a number that is going up by the second.
Meanwhile, our country faces expanding global threats while our military readiness is consumed with unnecessary engagements elsewhere.
If we want to be safe in the future, we need to get our debt and spending under control. Visit CVAfrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAfrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show my good friend Jim McLuhan. Like me, Jim's a Vietnam vet. However, Jim is also a Medal of Honor recipient as a result of actions performed in Vietnam. He's also a leader in the Medal of Honor Society. So, welcome, brother. Glad to have you with us.
Well, say, it's always good to be with you, Denny, and it's always good to know that somebody like yourself is taking these things over the air for people that can't have direct connections with the military.
Yes, sir. Jim, if you don't mind, start by sharing a little bit about the action for which you received our nation's medal, a highest honor.
Well, of course, as you well know, because of the action, there were 89 guys involved in it. So it's not a Jim McLuhan medal, it's an 89 soldier medal, whether they made it through the battle or not. But we were combat assaulted into Tam Ky area in Vietnam in I Corps on May the 13th, 1969, by helicopter. There were 13 helicopters that carried 89 men from Charlie Company, 3rd Battalion, 21st Infantry of the 196th Brigade Americal Division into this area. And we were to be a blocking force at first for Nguyen Hill, where some enemy soldiers had infiltrated that hill and taken it over. The captain of the company told the battalion commander when he was told the night before that we were going in there that it was a flawed mission because they had not sent any forward observers ahead of us. So we had no idea what kind of numbers of the enemy soldiers that were in there or the kind of firepower that they had. Well, the battalion commander told Captain Carrier that he would either take us in or they would court-martial him. And I'm glad he took us in because that was his second tour. He was a very intelligent man and was very savvy as far as fighting an enemy soldier was concerned. And because of his knowledge and his ability to adjust and modify, I'm sitting here talking to you because we found out later there were 2,700 enemy soldiers on that hill. 2,000 NVA and 700 VC against 89 of us. As we approached the drop zone, it was a hot LZ, which means the helicopters were being fired upon. And so they will not land in a hot LZ, and they had us jump out from about anywhere from 8 to 10 feet in the air with full pack, ammunition, weapons, the whole kit and caboodle. Two helicopters were shot down. One of them, they rescued the crew, and in the other one, they couldn't get another helicopter in because every time they tried, that helicopter was getting shot at and almost shot down too. So we sent a squad out, and on the way back in, they had rescued the crew of the second helicopter. I noticed one man was lagging behind. I kept an eye on him, and as everybody else got in about 75 yards ahead of him, the enemy was still behind him at about, I'm going to guess, 100 yards coming after him. So I jumped up and went out swerved out, slid in next to him like I sliding into second base. And I said to him, I said, where are you hit? He said, I'm not hit. I got my knee injured jumping out of the helicopter when we landed. So I said, well, hang on to your weapon because you're going up over my shoulders. His knee was about the size of a large 16-inch softball, and I knew he couldn't go any further. So I weaved and carried him in, and that was the first man of 10 that I rescued in the 48 hours of the battle. He has since passed away, passed in 2019 on December the 4th, and called me about a week before he passed to thank me for the 50 extra years of life that he was able to live. So, yeah, and both days combined, I was in and out of the kill zone. I was wounded the first day, refused to go in on the medevac because I knew that they were going to need me. And so the lieutenant of my platoon, Lieutenant Clark, put me in for the Distinguished Service Cross, told me that he had done so about 4 months after the battle. But he said, one of my superior officers told me that you're nothing but a private first class and they don't get that, to put you in for the Bronze Star instead of the Distinguished Service Cross. And I looked at this man and I said, sir, I'm not here for any medals or ribbons on my chest or uniform. I'm just would like to get home and be a coach, a teacher, and a father. So I got that Bronze Star with V for Valor. I earned another one 40 years later. He went back after the DSC, and I'm going to shorten this. It took him 7 years, almost 8 years. It was 8 years by the time I finally got the Medal of Honor. But by the time the request for the Bronze Star to be raised to the Distinguished Service Cross got on the desk of Ashton Carter, he had collected buku, that's a lot of material about the battle, and he had, you need two eyewitness letters, and he had collected 9 eyewitness letters from the 32 that walked out of that battle on the 15th of May. Carter, Ashton Carter, Obama's secretary, this was in the late part of his last year and term. He said, no, the Distinguished Service Cross is not high enough, so he recommended it be boosted to the Medal of Honor. That medal must be given within 5 years of the action. And at that particular time that Carter had boosted it to the Medal of Honor, it had been 47 years since the battle. So Debbie Stabenow of Michigan wrote a bill that had to be passed in the House and the Senate to waive the 5-year stipulation. It passed in December of 2016, got a call from Trump May of 2017, and was awarded the Medal of Honor July 31 of 2017.
And if you couldn't tell, Jim was a medic.
Yeah, I was.
And I don't think there's any question that he deserved that award. And frankly, when he came back, he became a teacher and a coach. And I think if there was a Medal of Honor for civilian work, I think he'd have another one, but he doesn't. And it's all right, because we can pick on each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a couple of those similar Distinguished Citizens Awards, actually.
Now, you're also in leadership in the Medal of Honor Society. Talk for a minute about what that society is and how citizens can impact it or be impacted by it.
Yeah, that's a shrinking society. When I first came in, I think there were somewhere around 90-some Medal of Honor recipients. At the present time, there are 61 Medal of Honor recipients living in the world. I am the only Medal of Honor recipient living alive in Michigan. And we've lost 3 others within the last couple of years. Charles Kettles out of Ypsilanti. Dwayne Dewey, who was living in Florida, but had lived in Michigan for several years, a lot of years. And then a guy by the name of Robert Simonak, who was from Novi, and he was a Korean War veteran too. So Kettles was Vietnam, and Dewey and Simonak were both Korean War vets. And so I'm the last man standing in Michigan for that. But I travel all over. I did around 155 events last year, a lot of traveling, and this year we'll beat that. We're not trying to beat it. It's just happening that way. And I do anything from speak to organizations to raise money for organizations that help veterans to speak to kids in the schools. I am the chairman of what we call our character development program. And we rally around six characters: commitment, courage, citizenship, sacrifice, patriotism, and integrity. And teachers are taught free of charge. It's a $1,500 training. They get a booklet where they don't even have to make up their own lesson plans. They can use it any way they want to. If they have a math class, for instance, maybe they want to use 30 minutes every Friday to use it. But all of the civics classes and things like that are no longer in the public school system. So we're hoping to reach, we're hoping to really boom that program across the United States and reach a lot of kids, because character is one of the most important things.
Well said, brother. There's more to discuss about our nation, and Jim is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. They want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, sometimes. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Jim and I will be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen, from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We'll continue our conversation with Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan. We want to talk about the fact that the joy of living in the freest nation in the world. Jim, since last Thursday was the 4th of July, our nation's birthday, I think it's reasonable for us to discuss that this nation, while currently in one heck of a mess in a lot of ways, is still the most powerful, wealthy, and free nation in the world. You and I took an oath to support and defend not our country, but the Constitution that protects those rights and those freedoms. I love America, and I'm proud to have defended it.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to make a comment at this point that yourself and any other veteran is no different from a Medal of Honor recipient, because each and every one of you signed your name on a line that said that your particular military group could send you anywhere that they needed you. They could send you into harm's way. They'd send you into an area where death was high. So you don't jump on a grenade thinking it's not going off. You jump on a grenade thinking it's going to go off. And that's what all veterans do when they go into the military and swear to an oath, as you said, that they'll protect the American values. They also give our government permission to put their life on the line for this country and its people and generations of people who are yet unborn.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely right. I've had friends who were veterans who, well, I never served in a war. I didn't go to the war. I was somewhere else. I said, dude, it wasn't your job to start a war. It was your job to be prepared to defend it any way the country told you they needed it.
And I might say that even citizens, whether you've worn a uniform or not, you too can stand up. That's one of those characteristics that we boast, is which courage. You step up and stand up for what America stands for. And when you see somebody doing something that they shouldn't do or harming some other person or their property, you too can be that soldier or that person as a civilian that can protect the way of life that we enjoy.
Very well said. And we've left out our first responders, but the average citizen.
Yes, the average citizen. Yes. We give out several citizens awards each year for bravery that has been done by all the way from children on up through a lot of different people and different acts that they've done to save people from drowning, to save people from being burned up in a car. You know, that there are people in everyday life, if you have enough courage to go and save a life, you can do that. And it doesn't have to be a life and death. You can save a life by helping someone who's depressed or someone who's having trouble with money issues or so on and so forth. So we can be saviors in many ways.
That's true. Being a coach on a kids' sports team is, you know, there's hundreds of ways, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and yes, sir, being active in the community.
Yes, yes. Just by telling somebody you love them and tell them why you love them, tell them what their worth is.
Yes.
Why are they so worthy that you love them and you need them and you want them to be a part of your life? That's something that we don't say enough of.
There's an understatement. Yes, yes, you're right. And we do live in the richest, freest country in the world. Despite all our weaknesses, yes, we're imperfect and we're weaker now than we've been for a while. But even now, the person in your community who sleeps under a bridge at night is richer than 80% of the people in the world today. 50% of the people in the world today are illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have never had anything under their feet but dirt. So many are poor, and that's all they've ever known, which is why Jim and I, the government helped us learn about that by sending us to Vietnam. But there's mission trips, and there's all kinds of trips where you can go to other countries and see what life is like for the majority of the people of the world. We're really blessed.
Oh, very blessed. And I'm going to take a twist off of that. I'm going to piggyback off what you just said. I've talked with some people who just come back from celebrating the 80th birthday of D-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they have told me how well the American cemeteries, individual Americans who died to save those countries and are buried in those countries because they couldn't get them home, they take such good care of those cemeteries. The children come out and make sure that it's clean, that there are flowers on the graves. We need to do that here. Lincoln said a country that does not honor its heroes soon will not endure. And so if you know a hero, or if you know somebody that their cemetery is looking a little bit rugged, go down there and straighten that up and show the respect that we have for people who have paid the ultimate price, and that is their life, so that we can have these freedoms that we have.
Indeed. And another extension of that is know the history of our country.
Oh,
so
yes.
That when somebody makes up some BS, you don't believe it. You know that it's not true. We have to know the history of our country, or we don't really understand who we are and how we got here.
Well, Denny, you and I talked about this, where I've ran into people who were not born in this country, but now are American citizens. And they often have more gratitude for the country that they become a new citizen of than some of the individuals who are born Americans. I mean, sometimes I tell kids, you know, number one, you're going to someday realize, especially if I'm in a small community or small school, you're going to be really thankful for growing up in small town America. But most of all, you're going to be really grateful that you grew up in America, where you have these choices. You can marry the person you want to marry, or get the job you want to, go to the school you want to go to, go to the gas station you want to get gas at, so on and so forth. You know, only in this country can you have those multiple freedoms and liberties.
Yep. And there are a few other countries that come close, but our Constitution gives us those rights. This is Colonel Denny Gilliland, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Jim McLuhan. Jim, this is an election year, and I don't want to get into politics, but it's our responsibility to be good stewards of the country God has given us. We have to take care of it. That involves knowing who we've elected.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience that most people vote stupid. I always vote Republican. I always vote Democrat. Mm-hmm. I always vote pro this. Somebody gives me a list and I vote it. I don't know who the people are. I don't even know what the positions are. And I never hold any of them accountable. I never write them and ask them what they're doing or call their office. That's not taking care of the country that we've inherited. And if we don't take care of it, it's subject to being abused. Is that a fair statement?
Well, a fair statement is that if we sit around and complain about who's in office and whether they're doing the job or not doing the job, and we didn't vote, well, we missed our responsibility from the very beginning And I think I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an American. And I need to know who's running for office so I can pick the best person that I think will do the job and continue to make America great.
Yes, sir. Jim, we're coming out of time. Start a wrap up. What should all of our citizens be doing now and into the future? What could we be looking to do? How should we be thinking about all this if we're going to honor our country?
Well, I think that those things that we don't feel are going well, okay, the problems or whatever you want to label them as, if we don't stand up against those problems and say, look, we don't like this, let your Congress person know, let your House of Representatives know the way that you feel about it. And I'll use an example. If you don't like electric cars and you have a reason why you don't like electric cars, then don't take away our cars that are ran by gasoline, you know, those types of stuff. Just use that as one example. You have to stand up. That's the courage. That's one of those characteristics, that you stand up for what you believe in. If you don't stand up for it, then don't complain that it's not going well. Let people know the way you feel about it.
Well said. I mean, I've often said one of the things that's horrible about all of our elected officials is they can't read minds. So no. If you don't tell them what you want, they don't know how to represent you.
Yes. And that goes for the way that the general public is being notified as to what's going on. If you think they're not being notified well enough and they're not being completely honest with the media, then we need to say something about it. We need to say, we need to know everything. I have a school that I go to, Caledonia. There's a gal there by the name of Heather. And Heather is a government teacher. She zeroes in on the Constitution. I'm glad you said something. Because that is our rule book. Every coach has a rule book, whatever sport that he coaches. I had a rule book that I had to follow in baseball, and I had to know those rules. The Constitution are the rules that you need to know that govern this country. And she says that her goal, and they do come up with, different feelings or opinions about the Democrats and the Republicans, and she lets both sides come out. But her main value, she said, the one thing I want those kids not to know when I get to the end of the semester is whether I'm a Democrat or a Republican. I want them to know that I follow the Constitution. I want them to know that the people that I vote for follow that Constitution, and that it's her duty and their duty.
Well said, brother. Jim, thank you. Thank you for your excellent comments, for your service to our nation in the past and now. I'm glad we're brothers.
Yeah, I'm proud to be your brother, sir, and friend.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with the father of Navy SEAL David Warson, who was killed in combat. Then General Don Bacon will discuss his service to our nation, and Teresa Robinson will introduce to another female veteran. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 more push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.